Hello everyone, I'd like to talk to you about our newest sponsor, Misty'sGardens.com. Now this is a contraption where you can grow food in your apartment, in a small patio, or if you're like me and you absolutely suck at gardening, this makes life a lot easier. It is a vertical tower garden. We can grow over 20 things at once in a small, compacted area. Good health starts with good habits, like eating wholesome foods. And with tower gardens, you can easily grow your own fresh, nutrient-rich food virtually anywhere year-round without soil. So, Misty'sGardens.com, have a look at it, check it out, buy it, plant, and like it. Misty'sGardens.com.
Okay, good morning, guys. It's Talia. You're listening in to the Talia Like It Is show on Freedomizer Radio. For those that are calling in, listening live, welcome to the show. I'm going to be continuing our chat on home births versus hospital births. It's just, you know, the whole premise here is just about being properly informed, having a little bit more of an informed consent when it comes to hospital births especially. And, you know, the average woman in this country who is pregnant, when she dives into just looking into birth options, unfortunately it starts with just what does my insurance cover, right? Because we don't want to really have to shell out. I mean, birth is expensive. And these are just, so for instance, numbers from just 10 years ago, the average cost of hospital vaginal delivery in America without any complications was a little under $10,000, around $13,000 if there were any complications. This was already 10 years ago. So those numbers have doubled, if not tripled. You're seeing a lot of vaginal deliveries hitting the 20,000 range, but you know, people figure, well, my insurance covers it. They don't have to worry about that besides for, you know, the out-of-pocket deductible that you'd have to pay. So C-section births 10 years ago were between $15,000 to $25,000. Nowadays, you're seeing those numbers passing 40,000. I've heard of some women who are telling me that their bills were past 60,000, but that's just with everything, like everything had gone wrong. So I do want to start the chat as well by saying that I am not an OBGYN. I am not a midwife. I'm not a certified nurse. I am only providing you package inserts and information that you can further look into yourself. We do live in the day and age of technology. The World Wide Web is at our fingertips, so you have countless studies, countless thousands of studies online that you're able to access. So please don't feel, because you do not have a degree in something, that you can't look into something or at least ask the question. Because as my guest last week, Victoria, mentioned, in touring one of the country's, you know, top and very schools for OBGYNs, where she was in a room filled with those who had just recently graduated and were going to get, you know, they had already gone through the many years of schooling. They're only learning the one way to birth. They're learning, you know, how to help a woman birth while she's on her back. So even when I was going to start looking into my options for home birth here in Nevada, my OBGYN that I was given through our insurance, which would have been a free birth had I had that birth in a hospital, it wouldn't have cost us anything. That OBGYN, when I asked them how many births they've actually had, you know, none at home that they know or that they had on their record, but hospital births, they've only done a couple hundred. I asked how many were all natural without medications, you know, not on their back, not even on the bed, and how that went about. And the number was under a handful. So, you know, then when it came to discussing all of this with my midwife, hundreds of births at home in every position breached natural home births as well. So keep that in mind as well. You know, there's so much of this pushback when it comes to the questions we need to be asking midwives, you know, but we forget that we can, just because our insurance has given us the one or two options of OBGYNs to check out, doesn't mean that you also can't have those same questions for these doctors. Once again, you are the employer, they are the employee. We have to kind of take that back and remember that they work for us. So go in there with your list of questions, even if this is going to be a hospital birth. And so today I wanted to really dedicate the show to Pitocin. It's an oxytocin drug that is given to women to help speed up labor. Initially, things like Pitocin and C-sections were for emergencies only. That's when they originally were introducing this as something that you do in case of an emergency. And what ended up happening is speeding up of the labor obviously gets that patient in and out of the hospital quicker. They can admit more patients, and you can also charge for something like this. Insurance companies will cover the cost of Pitocin. A Pitocin drip can run anywhere from $2,500 to upwards of $5,000, depending on the hospital. And naturally, they will say that your insurance will go ahead and cover this. So in a lot of my chats, you're going to be hearing of the Cochrane Review. And if you don't know about them, I would suggest that you put them on your radar organization to look into. So it's the Cochrane Collaboration, and they were founded in 1993. They are one of the most unbiased when it comes to reviews and studies. It's a global organization. So the main purpose of the Cochrane Collaboration is to develop systematic reviews of the strongest evidence available about healthcare interventions. Consumers and health practitioners, they work together to make the best possible decisions about healthcare. The reviews are published electronically within the Cochrane Library and are freely accessed in shortened versions. They're more like abstract consumer summaries. So why would you trust Cochrane? Well, the reality is that keeping up to date with the latest healthcare, it's a serious challenge for many healthcare providers. Research is being published every day all around the world. Information is appearing in thousands of medical, scientific, and health-related journals. Furthermore, the results of one healthcare study may be different from or even contradictory to the result of another study, making it very difficult to draw conclusions. The journals are then published in a variety of languages, and Cochrane Review authors attempt to translate these articles wherever possible to produce a review. The collaboration, this is the most important part of Cochrane, okay? It is a not-for-profit organization, and they're based in the UK. So they are privately funded, and they do not rely on, you know, government funding, so they're not trying, and they don't work for the pharmaceutical companies, so they're also, there's no pockets being lined, they don't make more money, they don't have, like many of those that are on the ACIP board and that work in the CDC, they don't have ties to the latest pharmaceutical coming out or the latest vaccine that's trying to be pushed on the market. They don't profit from that. So they're able to give a very, very unbiased review. They're the people that have come out year after year after year with their reviews of the flu shot, which I would suggest putting that as well on your list of things to look into, because it's a joke. And they continuously, year after year, call the flu shot just ineffective. These are the guys, okay? Their mission is producing these systematic reviews that support disease and health condition-based groups They work with authors and editors to develop these reviews, okay? And the main activity of the collaboration is the preparation of Cochrane reviews that are published electronically in successive issues of the Cochrane Library. If you are listening and you're not able to get this online, you would spell that C-O-C-H-R-A-N-E. Okay, so these studies are published electronically. We have access to these things, guys, okay? This is free for us to view. And people are still surprised to hear that many healthcare decisions are made without strong evidence on their effectiveness and lack of harm. This is why we need to be constantly putting that out there, putting this information out there. They have about 13,000 members and over 50,000 supporters from more than 130 countries worldwide. They have volunteer contributors and researchers, health professionals, patients, people passionate about improving these health outcomes for everyone. So this is a huge global independent network, and they've been doing this for over 25 years. So they do not accept commercial or conflicted funding. This is vital for them to generate authoritative and reliable information working freely, unconstrained by these commercial and financial interests. So they are a very trusted source, trusted evidence, informed decisions, just better health for all of us. All right, so I want to get into a little bit of what Cochrane had come up with in their reviews. This was from 2017 when for people who are without epidurals, okay, and medication, birthing positions that are best supported by evidence. So they did a controlled trial that included more than 9,000 birthing mothers in hospital settings. In these studies, they were randomly assigned to either upright or non-upright positions during the second stage of labor. The studies could still be included in the meta-analysis if they were assigned people to upright positions during passive second stage of labor, but not during the active pushing phase. In other words, people assigned to upright positions may have been upright for the passive second stage of labor, but lying down for active pushing and or birth. The researchers defined upright positions as sitting on a birthing stool or cushion, kneeling, hands and knees, and squatting, and they defined non-upright positions as side-laying, semi-sitting, and lithotomy, okay. And for those that don't know what, this is how you spell, L-I-T-H-O-T-O-M-Y, for those who don't know what that is, one moment here, loading. That's a surgical removal of the stones from bladder, kidney, or urinary tract, which I'm learning something new today as well. So cool. Got that down now. Okay. So where was I and what they had found? Okay. So in comparison with non-upright positions, people who were randomly assigned to upright positions in the second stage of labor were 25% less likely to have forceps or vacuum-assisted birth, 25% less likely to have an episiotomy. That's where they kind of slit you open down there a little bit more. Not good. I wouldn't recommend it, but it is practiced often in this country. 54% less likely to have abnormal fetal heart rate problems, 20% more likely to have second-degree tear. The absolute risk was 15% for people in upright positions, 48% more likely to have estimated blood loss greater than 500 milliliters. The absolute risk was 6% for people in upright positions, 4% for those in spine positions. So they found that people in the upright group were more likely to have estimated blood loss greater than 500 milliliters. The authors then were questioning the accuracy of this because the blood loss was based on care provider estimates, which is not an accurate way of measuring blood loss. And it's interesting to note that in the research on planned home birth in the United States, where upright birthing positions are more common, an estimated 16% of people lose greater than the 500 milliliters of blood postpartum. In hospital births, the majority of people give birth in back-laying positions. We see a similar rate of people with postpartum blood loss when expectant managers are used in the third stage of labor. And so upright versus non-upright birthing positions may not have much of an effect on blood loss, at least. So that's what they were finding there for those that were curious about that, thinking that, you know, you might lose more blood if you're at home in a setting where you're not in a hospital. There really is no difference with that. And that's what they found. And the trial was, once again, conducted with over 9,000 birthing mothers. So, and we can get into a chat on epidurals another day. Now, Pitocin. Okay. Our bodies produce, Pitocin is pretty much a synthetic form of oxytocin. Okay. It's, and our bodies now make oxytocin naturally. I want to get that out there. It produces oxytocin naturally when we are, you can't be scared for it to be, when you're scared or your heart's racing, you're producing adrenaline. That's different. Oxytocin would be the exact opposite. It is made, you know, when you're in love, making love, enjoying, you know, a good meal, nice conversation. Think of just your most euphoric moments in life, okay? And also then when you have a baby. Once your body has a baby naturally, you get that calm completely over you. And that is this rush of oxytocin that you receive. When natural oxytocin is high, you get neuroendorphins, okay? This is an opiate, and it's a natural opiate made by your body that has no side effects. Women who get to experience this, there have been studies shown that you reduce your chances of going through postpartum depression. Now, there have been women who've had natural home births that still go through postpartum. It's not an across-the-board statement for everybody, okay? It's just your chances are lower. So if you are drugged up, essentially on an epidural, or if you've got the Pitocin drip, you do not get to experience that for obvious reasons. And, you know, it's kind of like when you're a child and if you have a nightmare and you wake up and your heart is racing and you've got that adrenaline because of this terrible nightmare. Well, when your parents come into the room and they're holding you, comforting you, letting you know it was just a bad dream, suddenly that adrenaline is washed away and that, so your adrenaline goes down and your oxytocin goes up. So that would be an instance of, but it doesn't happen together. You can't have adrenaline at the same time as you're experiencing oxytocin. Can that happen while you're on Pitocin though? Because it's a synthetic form. Likely, because you get that adrenaline rush because your body has to push out this baby, so you get that excitement in you. But Pitocin, just like with everything, comes with all kinds of risks. We've established that that Pitocin was initially created to help speed up the labor. That's the purpose. But you just have so many stories of women who are just offered it. And in this country, it's one of the only countries where when they go by your delivery date, if you're a day or two past, they already want to schedule when you're going to be induced. You know, other countries in Europe and Asia, 43 weeks is kind of their max. And you know that when you're already that far along, you're getting checked almost every day, every other day. They're making sure that your placenta is not rotting on itself. And so that can be done too. But it really boils down to the inconvenience factor here, which I want you all to take note. More often than not, C-sections, inductions are taking place Monday through Friday. This is just more convenient for hospitals. It's more convenient for doctors who get their weekends off. They're not scheduling you on a Sunday morning you know, induction, unless it's one of those that they literally have nothing to do that weekend. And but more often than not, from the induction stories that I've heard and the C-section schedule, Monday to Friday. Why would they do this? Well, back then, you had this thing called labor delivery nurses. So feel free to look those up as well. This was a delivery nurse who would stay with you throughout, especially if this is your first pregnancy, or your first labor. They would stay with you for days as you were going through labor, because they knew that this procedure can take a long time, especially if it's the first time. Due to things like, you know, the unions coming in and obviously, you know, nurses having to switch shifts and that whole thing. Well, insurance companies, hospitals, doctors, they all kind of got together, and it just made no sense for there to be a position where somebody is staying with a mom who's going through labor for 3 days straight in the hospital. That was just looked at as a hospital is not a hotel. So, you know, what's the point? Why are you there? If they can get the baby out within 10 hours, 10 to 12 hours first birth, it doesn't matter if it's going to be because of a C-section or the Pitocin. They're not worried about that. They're not so much like health and safety of mother and baby first. But they're about convenience factor. Let's get this baby out, because once this baby is out, that room is cleared up. You get the mom into the next room over where she can begin the, you know, healing, whatever we got to give her for that. Please also keep in mind that before you go into a hospital and get admitted, you're signing your life away on that clipboard, okay, before they even admit you. So this is for the people that are like, yeah, but all the risks. What about the risks of birthing at home? And at least if I'm in a hospital, I'm in a hospital setting. You guys, have you looked into cases of people who have literally died or had their baby die in hospital birth? You can't go after the hospital. That thing that you're, that clipboard that you're signing before they even get you into the room, is you signing your life away, that you cannot sue them. I know people who've lost babies in the hospital. I know of some people who died during hospital birth. The families are not compensated. You don't get to just hire your lawyer. I mean, it's very few and far between cases where this can actually happen. So know that whether you're going to be giving birth at home or in a hospital, you cannot ever really go after the person that's helping you. Because even if you've got that midwife there, you know, you got to sign paperwork too, where you can't go after that person, which is why it's very important, whether it's your OBGYN or midwife, to really ask all the questions. Make sure that they are not only informed, but just check on their history on birth and what they do, and have they ever had a breached baby? Or, you know, one of the worries is the cord around the neck thing. And I even had to ask that when it came to my midwife. And then, you know, from what she told me and then me looking into it further, it's so common for that to happen. My son was born, both my sons, one in the hospital, one at home, both born with a cord around the neck. And literally when they come out, because the entire time you're going through the home birth, their heart's being monitored. You know, they have all of that equipment to do that. So it's not like they aren't monitoring the baby until the baby is getting ready to come out. So if that cord is getting wrapped and if they are being constricted, it's really only in those last few minutes of when they were coming out. It was a very, you know, they didn't even tell me until after, both times, whether it's the hospital or at home, you know, as to not panic me, but they just kind of put their fingers through and take the cord out, like it's no big deal. So I just want you to know of the risks on both sides, right? Okay, so let's look up the Pitocin insert. But wait, actually, before that, let's talk about what the induction looks like. So since Pitocin is a medication that causes your uterus to contract, there are additional safety precautions that are often taken to ensure the safety of you and your baby. You'll likely have some added safety interventions, hopefully. When you have Pitocin, we normally give you the continuous IV drip to deliver both the medication and the fluids, continuous electronic fetal monitoring to monitor your uterine contractions and the baby, and regular blood pressure checks. But at this point, if you're in the hospital, well, you know, you'd have to be in the hospital. They're not really giving you the Pitocin for a home birth. You're already hooked up, and you're in that, you know, abnormal birthing position on your back, and you've got the IVs in, so it really would be uncomfortable to kind of get up and do anything else. Now, the risks that are associated with Pitocin, as with any medication or intervention, there are these increased risks. And I'm going to cut to a really quick commercial break here, and then we will get into that package insert. So just give me 1 minute here.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
Okay, so welcome back. All right, so Pitocin is a liquid medication. It's a synthetic form of the naturally occurring hormone, oxytocin. We've established that. It's diluted with a standard saline solution and introduced into your body by intravenous or IV drip. The medication is regulated on a medication pump. It ensures you get a very specific amount. This has to do with, obviously, weight, things like that. So it's set to a certain amount of Pitocin per hour, depending on the orders written by your practitioner. The drip will normally be turned up every hour until you reach the contraction pattern that they are looking for you to have. You're going to hear all kinds of stories when it comes to Pitocin. I've heard it all. I've heard of women who say, yeah, it worked, as in the contractions were able to speed up right away. And then I've heard of women who say it actually slowed their labor down. So that's all really important to note when it comes to Pitocin. Now, you shouldn't ever just go to the hospital with contractions, and if you're laboring normally already, because this happens often, apparently, where there's no dire need for the Pitocin, but women will get admitted and they'll be offered Pitocin to just speed things along. When they're offering you the Pitocin to speed things along, chances are they're not going to offer you the package insert and the information that you need to make that informed decision, right? So that's kind of where I'm going to be coming in right now to go over the package insert, and you know that blood, because it comes also with the black box warning. All right, so here we go. We'll go over the precautions on this as well. You can find the Pitocin. The generic name for it is oxytocin, but we know that that's not real oxytocin. You can find that anywhere by literally just typing in Pitocin PDF or Pitocin insert, okay? So here we go. This is used 2, strengthen labor contractions during childbirth and control bleeding after childbirth. The medicine is also used to stimulate uterine contractions in a woman with an incomplete or threatened miscarriage. Important information already on the package insert. Before you receive Pitocin, tell your doctor about all your medical conditions or allergies and all the medicines that you are using. How many of us actually did that? If you've had the Pitocin or if you were offered it, did you go through an entire checklist of the things that you're allergic to? Okay, because you got to be careful if you're taking something and you're on a certain kind of medication, you know, you're risking anaphylaxis, you know, you're risking a lot there. So you want to be able to go over all that with your doctor. Of course, they're not going to have time to go over all that while you're already in the hospital trying to give birth. All right. So before taking this medicine, you should not receive it if you've had an allergic reaction to any of the ingredients in it. To make sure it's safe for you, you have to tell your doctor if you've ever had genital herpes, diabetes, high blood pressure, a heart rhythm disorder, cervical cancer, a severe infection in your uterus, 5 or more pregnancies, a difficult labor because you have a small pelvis, surgery on your cervix or uterus, or if you are less than 37 weeks pregnant. And also tell your doctor if you are breastfeeding a baby. They have not really been able to determine the safety and how much of the medication that's still in your system is going to be excreted out into your breast milk. So that's important to note as well if you want to do immediate skin-to-skin breastfeeding with the baby, okay? The Pitocin is injected into a vein through an IV. You receive this injection in the hospital, obviously. Your contractions and other vital signs will be watched while you're receiving the Pitocin. Helps your doctor determine how long to treat you with that medication. During labor, your baby's heart rate will also be watched with a fetal monitor to evaluate any effects that it's having on the baby while in labor. Obviously, not what's going on to the baby's own body, all right? Because you will receive Pitocin in the clinical setting, you're not likely to be missing out on the doses. Now, if you overdose, because there are cases where women have been overdosed on this, you know, it's not likely to occur, but on the end case, then you would just have to follow the doctor's instructions. You're kind of already at their mercy in the hospital. Now, on to the side effects. Common side effects that they want to list. Common reported side effects, nausea, vomiting, runny nose, sinus pain, irritation, memory problems, more intense or more frequent contractions. Those are the very common side effects that come with Pitocin. Now let's get into, there's been many FDA alerts on this, but of course they've gone ahead and they've approved this. Side effects will also include convulsions, seizures, difficulty breathing, dizziness, fast or irregular heartbeat, headaches, hives, pelvic or abdominal pain, skin rash or itching, vaginal bleeding, increased vaginal bleeding, weakness, rapid weight gain. So if you are in no dire need to speed things along, like if you're already in the hospital and you're numbed up, you got the epidural, and there's really no, I mean, the heartbeat's fine, you're doing fine, don't get this. I know I'm not a nurse here, but don't risk any more of these side effects. You know, the only issue is an inconvenience factor in that you want to meet your baby sooner. Because you have to note here that over 50% of women who are under Pitocin, okay, in the international numbers here, their babies are admitted into the NICU. That is the neonatal intensive care unit for babies. It's just kind of a standard. It's almost like the nurses already know that that's about to happen, so they're kind of they're kind of ready for it. Now, there's a lot of other side effects here that apply to Pitocin. Cardiovascular side effects have included hypertension, premature ventricular contractions, sinus, tachycardia, other cardiac arrhythmias. I'm reading from the insert directly, okay? Neonatal, bradycardia, premature ventricular contractions, and other arrhythmias have been reported. The nervous system side effects have included mania-like disturbances and seizures. Seizures may have been related to water intoxication, neonatal seizures, and permanent CNS or brain damage has been reported. Metabolic side effects have included water intoxication resulting in coma. Hypersensitivity side effects have included anaphylactic reactions. Genitourinary side effects have included pelvic hematoma. Excessive doses have produced pelvic fracture, uterine hypertonicity, spasms, tetanic contractions, and rupture. The side effect list does not stop. Gastrointestinal side effects have included nausea and vomiting. Respiratory side effects have included pulmonary edema. You've got renal side effects that have included decreases in glomerular filtration rate and renal plasma flow. Doses of 40 milliunits per minute may produce significant decreases in urine output. Right, I mean, I could go on. God, this would take up the entire show. Psychiatric side effects include memory impairment and mania in patients that are on higher doses. General side effects include low Apgar scores at the 5-minute mark. Fetal death has also been reported. Now, when you agree to taking the Pitocin, it's sold on you like this. Want to speed up your labor? We got this thing called Pitocin. It's like oxytocin. We're going to inject this into you, and it's going to get your contractions to kind of speed up along. You can meet the baby quicker. Sign here, right? So you're agreeing to, or your spouse is now signing for you, all of that. I doubt that there is somebody next to you at the hospital that is going over all of the what-ifs and can happen when it comes to Pitocin. This is where a side note, I want to point out that you get a lot of women that are just so against home birth because they want to talk about all the complications that can arise in the hospital. And it's a good thing you're in a hospital because you can have these low levels, you can have decreases in your urine output, you can have these psychiatric side effects, but you guys, if you weren't there to begin with, you wouldn't have to deal with these complications. It's almost like you're in the perfect storm kind of setting. So because you're in a hospital that is increasing your chances of all of these kind of side effects, then yeah, it's a good thing you're in a hospital. But would any of those side effects have even arisen if you weren't in that setting to begin with, is ultimately what I'm saying, right? So, yeah, that's kind of the insert is insanely long. But like I said, there's a lot that you need to do before receiving it. After receiving Pitocin, says you're supposed to avoid. Now you've got restrictions when it comes to certain food, beverages, or activities because of, and these are now reported serious side effects that the FDA had to release and that had to come out, which you'd have to tell your caregivers at once if you have any of these within days of having the baby. Fast or slow or uneven heart rate, excessive bleeding long after childbirth,
low levels of sodium in the body, you know, headaches, confusion, slurred speech, severe weakness, vomiting, loss of coordination, feeling unsteady, increased blood pressure, severe headaches, blurred vision, pounding in your neck or ears, anxiety, nosebleeds, and what other drugs would affect ketosis. They have to list this as well, but I doubt they're going to be asking you this stuff in the hospital, okay? Cough or cold medicine that contains decongestion. Medicines that contain caffeine, such as migraine headache medicine, or stimulant medications, such as drugs to treat ADHD, including Adderall, Concerta, Sitrona, Ritalin, Strattera, and others. Now, okay, I don't want to state the obvious here. You're kind of already off the path if you're pregnant taking Adderall, okay? I'm not even going to really get into that. You're insane. Why? Just don't do it, right? We know that while pregnant, you're supposed to limit just your caffeine, okay? Or just not at all. So that would be your Pitocin package insert there. Lovely. Lovely. You can look up JHP Pharmaceuticals, LLC. They produce this as well. So the injection is a sterile, clear, colorless solution of synthetic oxytocin, and it contains 10 units of oxytocin hormone, 0.5% chlorobutanol and chloroform derivative as a preservative, with the pH adjusted with acetic acid. It contains up to 16% of total impurities. The hormone is prepared synthetically to avoid possible contamination with vasopressin, which is ADH, and other small polypeptides with biologic activity. Oxytocin has the empirical formula. This is for those that are into chemistry. C43, H66, N12, O12, F2 molecular weight is 1007.19. I don't know how many of you who follow are that big into chemistry. I hated chemistry, but I also had a very boring, very boring chemistry teacher in high school. And, you know, it's like, I don't even remember him teaching all that much. I remembered him playing a lot of episodes of Bill Nye the Science Guy. That was my, I don't know, maybe you guys are similar with that. That guess goes back to the dumbing down education that we receive in public schooling. So that would be some of the ingredients in what you're receiving in the drip. So small amounts of the drug reach the fetal circulation. It has a plasma half-life of about 1 to 6 minutes, which is decreased in late pregnancy and during lactation. So following the intravenous administration of oxytocin, uterine response will occur almost immediately and subside within an hour. Following the intramuscular injection of the drug, uterine response occurs within 3 to 5 minutes and persists for 2 to 3 hours. Rapid removal from plasma is accomplished largely by the kidney and the liver. Oh, those foremen of your system that are working so hard to just keep you alive and keep you going. Elective, this is an important notice from manufacturer. Elective induction of labor is defined as the initiation of labor in a pregnant individual has no medical indications for induction. Okay, that's important to note, because if you don't have a medical indication to be induced, why are they offering it so often? Since the available data are inadequate to evaluate the benefits to risk considerations, oxytocin injection is not indicated for elective induction of labor. tell me why. Why so many stories are the same. It was just offered. It was offered to me to speed things along. That's just, you know, forget just the profit that they're going to be making on all of those yeses to speed this along. You guys following along with these side effects and things you're at risk for? I mean, I could spend an entire episode just talking about the laziness of this generation and the impatience, the complete impatience. I had a chat last week on just fevers, you know, because you're supposed to, if your immune system is not already weakened from everything else, if you've got just a normal immune system that you haven't messed with yet, you know, if you're a kid that you don't have all the vaccinations pumped into you, your immune system should be, let's call it decent, right? And you should give yourself your body. Your body is not like your Wi-Fi. It's not like your high-speed internet, okay? It needs those 2 to 3 days to process this and to work. It's magic, because that's all our bodies are doing from the day we are born, is keeping us alive. Our bodies are amazing. It's constantly, anything you put in it, it's going to try to keep you alive. So you want to continue to eat crap, it's going to try as much as it can until that final heartbeat, because you lived on McDonald's and Burger King for 40 years of your life, and that just taxed your heart so badly, but miraculously, it did get you to 40, you know? And ultimately, what I'm talking about last week with the fevers was your body needs that time to rest, to just be at home, but we can't. We can't even, to be told that, nobody wants to hear that. All right, I have moms who constantly message me, but then what do you do if your baby is sick? Well, you know, the most proven effective way to not spread that is still quarantine, right? So you got to stay home. You have to stay home and deal with a sick baby. And if you're used to this high-speed life of instant gratification, then 10 minutes cuddling up your baby and doing skin-to-skin seems like an hour. It shouldn't. It's just such a funny world we live in, right? Because it's also so quick to blink and say, man, life really just flashes right before your eyes. You know, one minute they're babies, and the next minute you're taking them to their first day of preschool. You know, it happens so fast. But to live through it, to live through the fever, to live through the cold with your kids, which was just standard practice, you know, you guys have to remember, in the programming, many of the things that we're pushing on our children, pushing on ourselves, have to do with the unfortunate, you know, truth here. It's a hard truth, hard pill to swallow. It's inconvenient for us to deal with this. Let that sit with you for a little bit. Nobody wants to do this. Nobody wants to now take that week to be with a sick kid. Measles hasn't killed anybody. Two kids, okay, with already compromised immune systems in over a decade in America have died from the measles, okay? More and more are dying from the measles vaccine. Tens of thousands are being injured by the vaccine. They live, but they're forever injured, okay? Because why? Because to be told that you're going to have to stay home with your kid for a week with the measles is like too much to bear. Why would you do that to yourself? You don't need to go through that. You don't need to sit with them at home for a week with the chicken pox, oatmeal baths, and, you know, watching TV with them and cuddling up with them on a couch, reading them a story. We're not parenting anymore. We're letting the system parent for us. We're letting them tell you what's inconvenient for you. Because why? You know, you could still play your Candy Crush at home with your kid while they're having the measles. We forget, you know, you could still check your Facebook. Just, I'm also there. I'm there with you. I don't want to have to do it, you know. I mean, my son, 5 months old, but a couple weeks ago got his first fever. And it was misery. It was a day. I mean, it lasted all of a day.
So, but it was a long day. It felt like 4 days. And the 4 hours that he was at a 102 felt like forever, guys. It felt like forever. And especially because it was in the middle of the night. And at 102, we're freaking out. We're freaking out at 102. When many, many, many studies will tell you, and doctors, that it's all out there. You could find this information yourself. It's not even a place to start worrying. It's really not. What are you doing taking your kid in at a 101 into the ER? What are you doing taking them into an urgent care at 101? Your body and your brain recognized the bacteria and infection. It's heating it up, okay? It's sending that signal to all the other organs, all the other parts to start heating up to kill it, to get rid of the bacteria and infection naturally. You're going to take suppressants, fever reducers, antibiotics. That's going to just, it's not going to even cure it. It's going to just reduce the fever. And you're tripping out your brain right now. It's like me being told that, because I got a migraine, and I got these moms and a bunch of my friends who are really into these oils, which I believe in, okay? But, you know, I know that if I go to my kitchen cabinet, I could pop 2 Excedrin. And I know, regardless of what's in the Excedrin and the side effects I got to deal with later, and, you know, I mean, I know that I could get rid of that migraine within half an hour of popping those 2 pills. I know that. Don't know what else is happening in my body, but I know that much. So for a mom to tell me, Talia, you can rub together the rosemary or peppermint oil and rub it on your temples and you sit and you wait like an hour or two, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. And that's just with me, for myself, and I'm an adult, okay? What's more, having to deal with a kid that's not feeling well? Oh, my gosh. The whining, the complaining. You guys, I get it. I get it, okay? But this is just the generation we're in right now. This is just the new norm where it wasn't before. Like I've mentioned, for chickenpox, the vaccine to even be sold in the American public, because they were just so used to it being a rite of passage as a kid. Oh, you get the chickenpox, whatever. Now you got natural immunity for life. Boom, you're cured. You're great. The way that when they first came out with saying, hey, we got this varicella vaccine, we want to add it to the schedule, many doctors were like, how are we going to sell that to the parents? Really? That's going to be a hard sell because they know that no one's dying from the chickenpox, you know. So how did they sell it to us? They marketed it for the convenience factor. You guys, look it up. Because in the UK and other places where it's not on the schedule, they laugh about the chicken pox. They're still sending their kids to school with the chicken pox. It doesn't even matter. Look up what happened in the Netherlands. I need you to, after this, go Google Netherlands chicken pox news. You got all these little kids in like kindergarten that all had the chicken pox, and it was picture day. And the photographer's laughing, the teacher's laughing. They're just all there. They call it the water pox for whatever reason. That's just the name for it there. But my point being, it's not something they're afraid of. It's like natural thing of life. And here they had to sell it to the American public with, you know, you're going to have to take a week off work. Why would you do that? If your kid just gets down, then anyway. Okay, so I'm not going to get into the chickenpox anymore. Back to, let's hit up some more contraindications for Pitocin if you're still on the fence. Because you'd rather that baby just come out. Come out already, baby, right? Can't wait. You know what I like to tell a lot of moms who are pregnant? Because I've done it 3 times. So the 3rd time around with my pregnancy, I was really like, this baby could stay in here, okay? This baby can stay in here till he's 2 years old. As long as he comes out walking, talking, telling me what he wants, cool. Because I know that the pregnancy is not really the hardest part. Now, okay, this should have even been mentioned in the beginning of the chat, but if you had a complicated pregnancy, clearly maybe home birth is not the thing for you, okay? That should go without saying. But if you have a typical, normal pregnancy. You know, you're eating pretty healthy. You're not just stuffing your face with whatever. Home birth could be an option. It's something that I would suggest looking into, okay? It doesn't hurt. Look into it. Ask the proper questions. I want to get into more warnings here with this. But, oh, so I'm already, like, losing. My mind is spinning right now. And I don't have a headache. It's just a lot of information to take in because I'm also learning a bunch of stuff here. This is one of the first times I'm really reading through the Pitocin thing here. But I always like to tell moms that are, you know, 38 weeks, 39 weeks. And you see all these new moms that are complaining. I just want this baby out. Get this baby evicted. Eviction date is set for blah, blah, blah. Why are you doing that? Why are you adding to your time in the hospital? All right? Because more often than not, you're going to get induced. Your baby's now in the NICU. Congrats. You just added an extra week of your life that you got to be in the hospital. Your healing is now going to take longer. Great. I like to tell moms that are impatient about meeting the baby, go to sleep. Enjoy what sleep you can get. Yeah, but I'm so uncomfortable. It's hard to sleep because of this big belly. You know when it's harder to sleep? When you got a crying newborn that needs you every hour of the day. That's the hardest sleep of your life. It's the hardest sleep of your life. And because we live in a country that doesn't really support maternity leave like in other nations where you get the year off, you get the care that comes, that we don't have that. Our postpartum rates are through the roof. My parents come from the Philippines, and so they didn't have to even really change one diaper, if you can imagine. You have services like that. Like the first diaper my dad ever had to change was my daughter's. He just didn't have to. You had maids. So you can sleep if you need to sleep. Hey, bottles are in the fridge. I'm going to go nap for 6 hours. We can't really do that here unless we've got a lot of money to be able to do that. So you get women that are constantly wanting to kill themselves or kill their babies. I mean, it's so much more common in America. You don't really hear of that in other countries. Side note, go to sleep. Just sleep. The baby will come when the baby comes. You know that at any day you can go to the doctor and get checked. You could check on the heartbeat. You could check on all that stuff. There's no dire need if the pregnancy is normal and progressing normally. So I want you guys to know of the effects and those adverse reactions, you know, in mothers. I mean, if you're getting reports of pelvic hematoma, rupturing of the uterus, spasms, anaphylactic reactions, postpartum hemorrhaging, guys, cardiac arrhythmia. I'm going to be looking up all this stuff today. Why are you chancing this? Why? We have to ask ourselves, am I just an impatient person? Do I just not want to wait this out, like with everything else? You know, am I trying to stimulate this labor to happen for selfish reasons or selfless reasons? Because if you listen to my first episode on home birth, which was last Wednesday's, I was one of the fortunate ones to know exactly when the conceive date was for my first baby. Actually, for my second, too. And actually, for my third, I can get into those stories later on. I knew when it happened, so I never went with that date that they want to tell you, right? Like, with Amelia, I knew the day that it happened. So when they told me the date in June, I was like, no, they're going by my last period. There's no way. And it's not this, like, I was right. There is a science to it, which is a 40-week. That's how long you're typically in labor for. I mean, pregnant for, sorry. 40-week labor, my God. So many women, though, are going by just the last period date. So how many more women think that they're late when they're really not, when their baby is really, like, fine in there for another week? Would you rather meet your baby when they were ready to come out? When they, you know, we're talking about things that are being taken away from us as mothers, things like experiencing natural oxytocin, you know, that rush that you get, experiencing this this birth, this all of it, experiencing all of it, the fact that your body can do this without even Tylenol. What are we taking away from these babies? This is their entrance into the world. And on day one, we are allowing that kind of disruption. It's almost like if you really sit back and think about it, how beautiful is it that the baby has a choice, right? Because they're a human, living human being. I don't care what. I mean, you know, right, they're a fetus until their face comes out. But when their face comes out, they're human. I don't know if you believe in that. It's a human being. And they get to choose. By nature's design, they choose when they're coming out. It's their choice. It's not yours. If it can at all be their choice, make it their choice. I know that. I don't know how that has to sit with some of you. When it comes to birth in this country especially, children have the least say in everything. Children are the group in this world that are the most neglected and that need the most advocates. And that's a whole other conversation. But your baby doesn't get that say just from the get-go, you know? It should be when that baby is ready to come out. Think of how many of us plan things, like, by our due date. The doctor gives you a due date, right? And what does the average pregnant woman do in this country? Okay, so now her family, the pressure, you're just putting way too much pressure on yourself while pregnant, you guys. Because now we got family that doesn't live in town. They're flying in. Everybody's like, well, how are you feeling? Is it almost there? What's the doctor saying? Like, we're adding all of this extra pressure on ourselves by a calendar date that's probably weeks off. For everyone else's convenience, then the baby. Then the highlight. Okay? Then Simba. It's like that moment, that is, should be priority number one, the health and safety of that baby. But it's like, you know, everybody else, you got everyone else breathing down your neck. Oh, but, you know, if I don't book my flight, even when we got a mother-in-law or a mom, you know, that. But if I don't book my flight now, then the rates are going to go up, and I want to be able to be there. And you know, should I be there at least a week before to help you with your nesting, help you prep? And should I, you know, how long should I stay afterwards? Okay? Sit back. Tell everyone around you, if you're pregnant right now, the baby's coming when the baby's coming. If you want to be here for it, great. If you can't, okay. Meet the healthy baby after. Don't spend your vacation time with me, possibly in a NICU unit, because we're trying to orchestrate this thing to benefit your schedule and your vacation time. Mom or mother-in-law or, but, you know, don't do that. Why are we doing that? I'm guilty of it too, guys. My dad and my sister flew in the day Amelia was born because I knew I wasn't going to be induced. I knew the date, like I said. They wanted to induce me on June 21, but I just knew I wouldn't be late around June 21, right? So they flew in June 30 because I was like, well, she'll at least be on her way around then. But they literally flew in, and from their airplane landing to the hospital, I think they waited about 4 to 5 hours and she was out. That was also probably just great timing on her part, right? But let's not lie to ourselves. More often than not, we are scheduling these things for the convenience of everyone else but the baby. If you need the Pitocin for medical reasons, if you need it, a C-section because of, you know, the risks in your pregnancy, by all means, have that done. Don't do it to convenience other people, though. This is a life. It's a life. It deserves every chance when it first comes out. You deserve that chance to get that skin-to-skin initially, to get those bonding moments that you will miss out on if you have to go through C-section, if you have to go through being induced, if your baby has to spend weeks in a NICU. You do miss out on those things. It does increase your chances to postpartum. Let's not kid ourselves here, is what I'm trying to say. We are all guilty of scheduling. It's hard to tell somebody nowadays. We don't know. Your baby might, you know, a lot of doulas and midwives that are more into the holistic, natural approach, which we should all be, they like to call it not even a due date. They like to call it a due month. Give yourself that month. Be pretty open during that month for whatever can happen. That's kind of how you have to look at it. Don't put that big X on your calendar. You're going to drive yourself crazy. If you put that X there, you know, think of it as a maybe. Could be that day, but it could be a week before. It could be a week after. And I'm not going to put that additional stress on myself, my body, my mind, this baby out. I'm going to be concluding today. I know many of you can go and look into these inserts yourself. Please do that research. I got some words to look up. You know, like I said, this is not my field. This is not my practice. But the information's out there, and we can look it up because it's not being provided to us. That we can all agree on that. And I'm excited because I did announce on my Facebook about the home birth and hospital birth series I was trying to do and to just normalize it a little bit more, and I got a lot of responses in from doulas, midwives, moms who've had multiple births, moms who've had twins at home, moms who've had home birth complications and how that happened. And I just got inundated with people who are willing to come on the show and share these stories. So starting tomorrow, I'm also going to have another mom. She's actually also in Las Vegas. We've been in a mom group together for a while, and I've never met her, you know, in person, but that could all change. It's a new year, new things, right? But she's going to come on the show and share about that she also was born at home, and then she's had her babies at home. So I'm excited to hear that, and I'm excited to hear from midwives the following week. I'm excited to hear from doulas. We're going to have a mom on who is also a homeschooling mom next week. I'm excited to talk to her. She, her firstborn was a cesarean, and then her secondborn was VBAC. She had her baby naturally at home because it's possible. It can happen. I know that many times you're not even given that option, as we've discussed before with insurance in this country. A lot of insurance, if you've already had a C-section the first time around, for the second birth, they won't even cover you if you want to try to go vaginally, which makes no sense, you know, when it comes to the numbers, because it should be a cheaper birth. So you would think that insurance companies would want that cheaper birth. But like I said, they're all in cahoots together. It's a racket. So they're not going to cover it. So you've got many moms that are paying out of pocket. And if you look at the home birth numbers in this country that have significantly gone up, ask yourself, why? I had the insurance, medical insurance, to cover an entire hospital birth for free, you guys. I would have had a $0 copay. Why did somebody like me choose to pay thousands out of pocket to not have to go through that mess, the hospital birth? Start asking yourself, why are people paying the money to not have to go through the hospital when they could have it for free through their insurance. There's something wrong. Our system is, it's messed up, all kinds of messed up. To have more people on the show, I'm excited to continue these conversations that I think are necessary to have. I just wanted to at least touch in on the Pitocin thing because I just know so many women that had to get it. And they say had to, like, they didn't want to. And then after having it, they didn't know all the side effects that were going to come from it. And then many times they didn't even need it. Like you hear often, the labors were already progressing. It's just, hey, let's speed this along. Next thing you know, you've got all this medication in you, and then you've just upped your chances for C-section, and you've upped your chances for your baby being in the NICU. So, all right, I don't want to keep going in circles here. Thank you guys for listening in, and I'm looking forward to your private messages on here and more things that I can go over in future chats. But hope you guys have a good day. Come on next 10 minutes here. And I will be back on tomorrow around 10:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thanks for listening in, guys. Enjoy.